Can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the many paths to transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it might feel counterintuitive, like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, also known as the Practical Alchemist. Thank you so much for joining me. Today's show is brought to you in association with NasalGuard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants. It blocks indoor and outdoor allergens, so it's great for travellers as well as people with pet allergies. It also helps with hay fever, which is on a lot of people's minds right now. More on that later. Meanwhile, the weather might not be living up to expectations for this time of year here in the UK, but foraging season is well underway. Our hedgerows are full of promise. Hawthorns looking glorious. You know you can eat the flowers and leaves right now. Elders in flower. Have you ever eaten elderflower fritters? Absolutely delicious. Cordial too. Don't just buy it from the supermarket. Try making your own. There's a lot of beautiful alkanet flowering near me too. That's a member of the borage family, and you can use the flowers in salads just as you would the more familiar borage. For centuries, the roots have been used to make a red dye too. Less welcome for many gardeners is cleavers, what we call sticky willy, an unprepossessing plant, you might say. It's coming up fast at the moment and can be pretty invasive, but it's also edible, so don't just toss it all on the compost heap when you're weeding. All of these plants have medicinal or tonic properties, and I've written a blog post with more detail on how we can benefit from them. You'll find that at thepracticalalchemist.uk. Foraging for food isn't just a way to supplement our diet. The very activity is nourishing and something that I'm sure my guest today enjoys very much. He's Jeff Golden, author of Reclaiming the Sacred, Healing Our Relationships with Ourselves and the World. Jeff has been teaching and writing for over 30 years. He was a Fulbright Scholar in Sustainable Development, and he's headed several non-profits promoting sustainability and international education. He led the creation of the greenest certified building in New York State, has written a regular column as The Green Advocate for Upstate House magazine, and he served as a liaison between the Mohican Nation in Wisconsin and their homeland in what we now call New York. Jeff joined me from his home there to talk about his book, the result of 12 years of dedicated work, and I suggested that for some, it will challenge traditional ideas about well-being and happiness. Here was his response.
Sure. Well, that's a little context perhaps to help people enter into this. In many industrialized countries, I'm in the United States, it's true here, it's true throughout much of Europe. Since at least the 1940s, the average level of happiness in these countries has been in a consistent decline, which is the opposite of what most people expect, given the incredible material transformation and financial transformation of these countries. And to just give an example, here in the United States, a third of homes in the 1940s did not have indoor plumbing. So we're talking about, we live in almost an entirely different world from what people in that time knew. And yet we are on average less happy. And there are other indicators that are really vital around this too. The most poignant to me is that, again, I'll say in the United States, I think it's similar in the UK, but in the United States, one in 25 people every year seriously considers suicide. And so I love that you pose it as a bit of a challenge. And I'm going to say the flip side of that is it's an invitation. there is a challenge here for people to rethink what progress really looks like, what success really means, and yes, what really does contribute to our well-being, which is the essence of the book that you were just holding up, Reclaiming the Sacred, which is exploring. We have so much detailed research now from the last 30 years or so about what really does nourish human well-being. And some of it is not surprising. And some of it really does surprise people, or at least the details surprise people. And really, the almost disconnect between material things and money and well-being is one of those places that tends to surprise people. And so there is a challenge in that, but truly an invitation and an opportunity, because it means we could be thriving. We could be living in much greater well-being just by turning our heads and looking in some slightly different directions in terms of how we think about these things.
Yeah, because it seems to me, especially in the US, but here as well, I mean, everywhere in the Western world, everybody's driven by money. Well, not everybody, I'm not, but people are driven by money.
Right. Yeah.
It's all about how much money you earn, what new car you've just bought, how big your house is, right?
Yeah.
But that's not it, is it?
Well, what the research shows is that about 2 to 4% of our happiness is related to material things and money. The way that works is that until you have enough money to meet your basic needs, additional money does make a difference because it buys us clothes and food and shelter. But once you can meet your basic needs at a very simple level, we're not talking lavish or large, then additional money does almost nothing for us. But which in itself defies some people's sense of these things. But even for people living in extreme poverty, there are other factors that are more important than money to our well-being. We can talk more about that if we come circle back around to it. But for now, the key point is that many of us get caught in the trap of continuing to prioritize money and to even experience ourselves in the world as consumers, as this is who we are. It is our purpose to produce, to work, and to consume. And when we start to channel more and more of our time into living that way, when we already can meet our basic needs, we actually then are compromising our well-being because we end up compromising so many of the things that really do matter. So that's where the challenge and the invitation both come in.
Yeah, you see, that is so, it's so interesting to hear you talk about that, because not very many people will see that as an issue. Really, I mean, in the day to day, because we're, I mean, what? Why is that? Is it the socialization? Is it the education? What is it about the way we live generally that makes us ignore all these other things in our lives and really just focus on money, status, you know, how much we've got?
Yeah. Well, I am going to refer anyone who wants to delve into that more in depth. You are asking the question of part three of this book, which looks at the psychology of money and how does it hook us if it really does so little for our actual well-being. But I'm going to summarize it for you by saying, yes, there is a cultural aspect, but throughout, there are about five different factors, and central to each one is that money essentially can rush in and be a hook for us when we are lacking in the things that really do nourish us, that really do bring well-being. So if we are feeling a lack of a sense of purpose, or a lack of a sense of self, in the sense that maybe we're not feeling good about ourselves, or we've internalized a lot of these messages from family and media and so forth about things that are wrong with us, all of our shortcomings, when those are the messages we're carrying on our heads, when we're scared, when we aren't happy, when we feel rushed and overwhelmed, all of these lead us to giving more importance to money. So someone who is feeling good about themselves, is having time for themselves, spending time with friends and family and so forth, they are much less concerned with things like status or distracting themselves with money and goods, you know, the kind of like after work quick zing that you're going to want because you're just feeling like flat and overwhelmed. And so you're going to go and buy something or do something. So in a sense, it's like the ways that money hooks us is the flip side of those things that really nourish us. And so that is part of the trap here, is that I think, as you were saying, it's not necessarily how people are going to look at it. The tendency is going to be like, Well, you say that money doesn't matter that much, but I'd rather go figure that out for myself, right? And okay, I'm going to take my chances here and go for the money. But really, the cost for us individually is profound. And of course, this has profound consequences for our society as well when we look at what we are doing to the natural world in our race to consume ever more. Again, we already have vastly more than any humans throughout the 300,000 years of human history. And those of us in the industrialized countries, far more than most people throughout the world will ever know. And yet, our orientation is towards the things we don't have and towards the more. And so, what we're doing to the planet is quite profound as well.
Yes, it is. And I was going to ask you, I mean, I'm glad that you made that point. And, you know, something that I'm very, very keen on promoting, and that is just let's not just buy new all the time. Let's just reuse. Where I'm sitting right now, I don't think very much here is actually new, right? It's all secondhand. And it's I'm very comfortable. I like my space, but I didn't have to go out and spend loads of money on something which has caused endless pollution, you know. But then I was going to ask you, so let's get back to the well-being side in terms of, you know, emotions and physical well-being. What are the things that we need to look at that would nourish us instead?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that. And I'm going to segue from your last question to this one by saying that when we talk about culture, of course, media and advertising play a key role in this as well. So, what distracts us or directs us, what informs our sense of what we can and should be doing is so much of that messaging, which is motivated by someone else trying to get their own money and stuff, right? When you step back from that, again, some of these things are common sense. Some of them go a little bit against it, or the details take us a little bit into a more subtle realm. But in terms of the lives we create around us, because there's the life around us and the life within us, in terms of the lives around us, relationships and connection are really important to our well-being. And one of the most reliable predictors of how happy a person is, based on the things you can measure in their lives, is the amount of time that they spend with friends and family, and just the number of friends that they have, like that they can call on in times of need, or how regularly they're just connecting with them. Someone you feel like actually knows you and is there for you. That's a vital one. Your physical health is important as well. Far more important than money, though actually less important than people often guess, which is to say that unless we are experiencing something really debilitating, the research shows that generally physical health is something that we are pretty adaptable around, and we have a general level of happiness that is ours, even when we go through some of the ups and downs of illness or some slightly sort of handicapping things that could be going on in our lives. And I see you nodding, so why don't I pause for a second? What were
No,
you
no, no,
thinking
no,
there?
no, you know, carry on. No, I'm just agreeing with you all the way, all the way along. It's really interesting. Now, the connection thing, the community, I think is hugely important. And of course, was one of the issues that we faced with lockdowns and that sort of thing, because people were losing that connection, which they really need. And you know, some of us do quite well on our own. I would say that I'm quite happy in my own company. However, we need support. We need to work together in a community or be together in a community.
And what the research shows is that this doesn't deny the fact that some of us are more introverted and some of us more extroverted, right? That's
Exactly.
absolutely true. But at the end of the day, even for introverts, the quality and availability of people, our sense of connection with other people, is still really vitally important. I'll just give one quick example. A study that I thought was fascinating looked at homeless people in Calcutta, India, and homeless people in the Western United States. And what they found was that the people in India generally were happier with their lives than in the United States. And this was despite the fact that objectively their lives were far worse in terms of access to food, health, access to any kind of jobs and shelter, all of that much worse. And yet they were happier. And what they seemed to have nailed down was that the key difference is that the people in India had managed to generally maintain some kind of connection with friends and family that had been utterly lost for most of the people in the United States. And one clue to this was that the people in the United States actually listed as the number one thing that they missed more than reliable food and shelter even, was connection with other people, friends, family. So this gets at what I was saying earlier about even throughout the world, people who are living in poverty, even extreme poverty, some of these other things actually still matter more to our well-being, which isn't to say that the physical things don't matter. They do. It's just not to lose sight of these other things that are so, so much more important and valuable. And in that vein, I'll jump to our inner lives, because I mentioned it's about our outer lives, but honestly, at the end of the day, our inner lives have even a much more important effect on our well-being than our outer lives. And when we talk about our inner lives, we're talking about maybe four or five things, if I were to sort of categorize them. One is allowing ourselves to experience and really be emotional beings. It is a vibrant core part of being human, of being a person, is experiencing a range of emotions. And so often what many of us are trained to do is to repress those, to try to always sort of be in our heads and move forward. Don't cry. I mean, that's one of the central
yeah,
ones,
yeah,
right?
That's a big one, especially if you're a guy, right? Don't cry. Men, real men don't cry. That's what we always used to be told, yeah.
Yeah, and women entering what was traditionally a men's world, right? You go into work, well, work is not a place to cry, and those sorts of things. And yet, there is so much wisdom in our felt sense of ourselves and the world. And so one of the key things the research says is that, yes, people who tend to be in a more joyful state are generally happier, but even happier than them are people who allow themselves to experience a range of emotions. So it means not always shutting down that sense of fear or anger or sadness. So living in our emotions, and just to briefly name a couple of the others, a sense of gratitude and presence. And I think that actually I should mention this with regards to all of these. What the research generally shows is that this is our natural state of being. We are naturally happy beings with a sense of presence and belonging, but it can become so overwhelmed and we can be redirected with all of this messaging. I find that really encouraging because it's not about going out into the world and finding our happiness. There's still a journey here, and as you mentioned earlier, maybe a challenge, but the challenge is much more about finding the barriers within ourselves. And that's true with this sense of presence and wonder. That is, in many ways, a natural state of being when we have a little time and space for it. But in today's day and age, often we have to be intentional about creating the time for that, right? And the space, because our jobs and everything else aren't going to just generally hand that to us.
Yes, I'm so glad Jeff talked about our default state there. So many of us have to work through all the conditioning and find our way back to that happy place. Well, we'll hear more on that from Jeff Golden in a moment. First, it's time for a short break to hear these messages.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today, author Jeff Golden. And we were talking about happiness as our default state before the break. Here's Jeff again.
Yeah. The research shows that, and I keep referring to the research, and of course, these are averages. You know, at the end of the day, we're all different, but there is something still really helpful in looking at what the average is. And the research shows that on average, people are happy. And this tends to be true even for people living in extreme poverty. Obviously, at a certain point, poverty, extreme poverty can be overwhelming, and it comes along with other things as well that can absolutely undermine our happiness. But generally speaking, humans are hardwired to be happy. And another quick fact I'll just throw in here is that I mentioned earlier, Homo sapiens, as we today define that, have been around for about 300,000 years. You know, the same physical and mental capacities. That's our ancestors going back 300,000 years. The evidence suggests that for most of that time, those people were actually probably happier than many of us today living in industrialized countries, because we have completely gone a different direction on every single one of these points about what really nourishes human well-being. And of course, for most of our ancestors, they spent a whole lot more time being than doing, and being in relationship with other people and also just with their environment, right? With the cycles of the moon and the seasons and the weather and the creatures and plants around them. And so these are the things that we're being called back to, that are here for us waiting. If we can find our way through a bit of all of this other distraction and overwhelm, I want to share one more thing, because this is in some ways the most significant of the factors when it comes to well-being and our inner lives, and that is our relationship with ourselves. And again, so many of us are deeply conditioned. I mean, some researchers, among them Brené Brown, who's a pretty prominent person in the field, suggests that everyone lives with some degree of, as she defines it, as shame, a sense that there's something fundamentally wrong with us. Now, this isn't necessarily universal in different cultures, but I think that in the Western world, it bears out in the research. And what happens is, as children, whether it's our parents or friends or messages in the media, we internalize all these things about who we are, what's good about us and what's not good, and what should be kept hidden, or we even distance ourselves from it. I mean, the origin of the word shame is to hide. So it's about keeping these things hidden from others, from ourselves. Sometimes we aren't even conscious of this, but again, the research is clear that when we are carrying this kind of negative messaging within ourselves, instead of alternately living in a sense of, I am a freaking miracle, walking and moving amidst the miracle of this world, which I think just objectively is what's true, right?
Yeah.
We are brilliant and beautiful and amazing and successful. I mean, even someone, when you look at them, you're like, God, like, such a failure. I mean, well, they're succeeding in 98% of everything that they're doing, but we look at these little things and get hung up on them. That when we carry the negative messaging, that shame with us, it's like a weight. And no matter what else is going on in our lives, it holds us down. I mean, and it helps to explain something like, well, why can't money do more? Well, how much can money do if we're carrying around these negative thoughts about ourselves and hiding parts of ourselves, feeling like that's what we are? Alternately, when we live more in that sense of wonder and miracle, I'm going to say self-love, but you could just say even self-acceptance or self-compassion. Again, the research shows that that is like, it elevates us no matter what we're going through. That is a resource for us, a well that we can draw from in terms of staying stable in our lives and keeping in touch with our joyful selves.
Yeah. And I love that you talk about, you know, doing and being more, or rather being more,
right.
You know, because I think we lose track of that. We're constantly told that we have to do X, Y, and Z and achieve X, Y, and Z. And of course, we lose sight of just being and tuning into who we really are, rather than who we think we should be because somebody's told us that we need to fit into this, that, or the other box.
And
I love that you talk about the research, because, you know, quite often people talk about all these things and they don't mention research, but it's really useful, I think, to know that people have looked into these things and they have researched them. And I'm a big proponent of connecting with nature and that being part of our community almost. You know, I'm sitting here with my big plant behind me, and I have a number of them in the room here. But I always love to have plants around, other sentient beings around me, and have that connection. And of course, you know, being out in nature as much as I possibly can. But you know, there's research on that as well, isn't there? And that's something that you talk about as well.
There is, and I'm going to answer that question by simply saying yes, that time and nature, but time and nature contributes to our well-being. But I'm only doing that because everything else you're saying, just I want to tell a quick story that I know you're going to relate to, which is that this was probably 10 years ago. I was in the middle of a big work project and I was so busy all the time. And I had scheduled to go to a little mountain lake with some friends. And it's not far from me. It only takes about a half hour drive. And then it is about maybe an hour and a half hike in, but you find yourself amidst these peaks with a lake right there. And this was the summertime. It was absolutely gorgeous. Everything that could help you feel good in yourself and comfortable in the world was there present. And beforehand, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I have the time. I've got all these things I have to get done today to sort of, and the sense was to take time out, to go and do this. And I got there. And I wasn't there 20 minutes before I just had to laugh at how ridiculous that was, because what was so clear was that I had just returned to where life is really happening. And that in a sense, it was like, well, do I have time to take off from this to go and do that other stuff? Should have been the real question. It was like, I spent an afternoon living, right, in the flow of this gorgeous life and world that is so precious and all too brief. And here I was. And it was the absolute reverse of what I've been saying. It was like, well, am I going to take time off to go and do that stuff again? And of course, it's a balance. But I mentioned this because I've already told you, I feel like I'm vicariously happier every time I hear you talk about going and swimming in the sea. And it just speaks to me in terms of, again, what does it look like for each one of us to both create time in our lives so that we have a sense of time abundance, right? Just even those little things where we go and do that. And then the activity itself being the kind of thing that doesn't, I mean, I'm not going to knock, for example, TV shows, which can be delightful, and the research is mixed. The more TV you watch, the less happy you tend to be. But some of it's great. Go do it. But there is a difference between what is often sort of a distraction of that versus something like going and swimming in the sea or going for a walk in the forest or something like that, where you are dropping into yourself and connecting with the world around you more, right? So yes, the research is really clear about that. And I love it that we both have these lived experiences around that as well.
Absolutely. And of course, I have talked to you about the fact that I swim as much as I can every day, as much as I can in the sea near me in Scotland. And a lot of people go, "Oh no, that must be freezing." But actually, you get used to it and it's actually very good for you. That cold water therapy is very good for you. But it's more than that because it's that connection with nature. The other day we were so delighted because the seals have come back to this just little stretch of coast and they're hauling themselves out and then sometimes singing to us. Well, we say they're singing to us, but they're actually just shouting at each other. They're actually just calling each other names because you're on their bit of rock or something. But we like to think that they're singing to us. And, and the other day we noticed really pretty sea slugs and, there's all the seaweeds that you can see and the fish and, the dolphins might be passing at some point and porpoises and sometimes there's whales, further out. And then the bird life, we see all these beautiful birds and it's just I find anyway, and I'm sure that some of my friends who I swim with find that you just feel enriched with this gratitude that you're surrounded by such beauty and wonder. It's a beautiful thing. And that has a huge impact on your physical well-being too.
And I'm sure that you sometimes feel this, that sense that, well, when I'm here, I'm really living. And then I'm going back to. So it becomes sort of a reverse of it's not, well, I'm going to take time out to go and do this. There's a sense that, well, that is where life is happening. That's me returning to some kind of source, right? And being in that. Again, not to knock all the other great things we
No,
either have to
no.
do or do, but just to
No.
acknowledge what those wellsprings can do for us.
And then the other day, I found it very difficult to tear myself away. I knew I had a load of things to do, but it was a beautiful day. The sun was out, it was warm, it was gorgeous, it was just stunning. And I was on my own, and I met somebody who I didn't know, hadn't met before, but they do live reasonably close, and we got to talking, and you know, we had a great conversation. It was a beautiful connection.
Yeah.
A beautiful connection. Yeah. And of course, you know, you're not always going to have that, but it's just an added bonus. It makes you feel good. And when anything makes you feel good, you are doing your health, physical health, a world of good.
Yep, that's absolutely true. You know, I mentioned beforehand, I have a little excerpt that I'd like to read that I feel like is really appropriate for this point.
Okay,
if we have a moment for that, do we?
Let's do it. Yeah, go for it.
Okay,
yeah,
let me share that with you.
Go for it.
It is, this is from chapter 11. The title of the chapter is Living in Mystery, Magic, and Miracle. The book Charlotte's Web tells the story of a pig, Wilbur, who lives on a farm, and a spider, Charlotte, who weaves messages into her web about how wonderful Wilbur is, so that he will not be slaughtered by the owners of the farm. The following conversation takes place among two of the townspeople after the first message appears. "Have you heard about the words that appeared in the spider's web?" asked Mrs. Arable nervously. "Yes," replied the doctor. "Well, do you understand it?" asked Mrs. Arable. "Understand what?" "Do you understand how there could be any writing in a spider's web?" "Oh, no," said Dr. Dorian, "I don't understand it. But for that matter, I don't understand how a spider learned to spin a web in the first place. When the words appeared, everyone said they were a miracle, but nobody pointed out that the web itself is a miracle. Or we might add that the spider itself is a miracle, and the light the web shone by, and the breath and the beating hearts of these two people having this conversation, and the sky, the earth, me, you, everything. I may, like Dr. Dorian, be using the word miracle in a slightly different way than people commonly use it, but I think it's really a better use of the word. It invites us to see the world in a way that is not only more beautiful and alive, but that is also fundamentally more honest and true. It's like in a story where someone looks at a bookshelf when the light is exactly right, and a door reveals itself, opening onto an entire other magical world. That is the universe we live in, one grounded entirely in magic, held together in magic, and recreated every moment in magic. All we have to do is get a slightly different angle on just what a miracle is, and let the just right light of that concept, miracle, reveal to us the magic all around us. It is an invitation to awe, to presence, to gratitude, and to greater happiness.
Oh, I love that. It was so lovely, don't you think? I'm really glad Jeff read it to us. Well, it feels like a good time to take another short break right now. But stay tuned for more from Jeff after these messages.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today is Jeff Golden, who read an excerpt from his book Reclaiming the Sacred before the break. Loving life is really about embracing the simple things, it seems to me, but we make it so hard for ourselves. Here's Jeff again.
And I would encourage anyone listening to think about it as a sort of ebb and flow, because we can become so overwhelmed and caught up in other things. And the goal here is not to beat ourselves up and be like, why am I not noticing all the miracles, you know? But not a bad thing to just recognize that I'm in a different kind of flow right now, but I'm going to make sure that I have some time for the other thing as well at some point, and let that really nurture you and take off at some other point, a week later or a month later or a year later or something. Again, it's not beat yourself up, but it's let these be little seeds that are germinating. And when the time is right, they can help come alive, lift us up, and we can continue sort of in that general trajectory, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think that's one of the common pitfalls is that we beat ourselves up, and we do ourselves down, we beat ourselves up, we question our own wonderfulness, our own fabulousness, and we fall into this black hole.
Yeah.
That can be very difficult to get out of.
Yeah. And especially that work around self-acceptance, self-compassion, self-love, that is not an overnight journey. That is one where what I've referred to in my own experience, it occurred to me like this. It's like my being is like a huge ship in the night cutting through the ocean, right? And each experience I have of my wondrousness, or each time I have a little insight and talk about something that I internalized that maybe I've never thought about or talked about or have been ashamed to, but each time there's a little bit of an opening there and I feel a little bit of lightness. It's like this little glowing fish goes up and just kisses the front of the boat. And it's an extraordinarily beautiful thing in the moment. Does it change the course of the boat? Not immediately, but enough of those beautiful little fish kisses does actually change by degrees the course of where we're going. And over the course of our lives, a change of a few degrees is enormous. So I think it really is important to acknowledge that. I mean, I have been doing deep personal work for, boy, like 15 years intensely and a little bit more, you know, on top of that.
With you on all of that, yes.
Yeah. And the rewards are palpable. It makes a significant difference. But yes, to be patient and to know that it's going to be up and back and ebb and flow, and to just lean in this direction and give ourselves a little bit of time, or when we're making decisions about, well, what am I going to do in terms of this next job? Do I want that promotion that's going to have me work tons more and give me more money? But, well, gosh, what would I have to give up? You know, we often think about not only our well-being, but our family's well-being. And again, what is generally going to be most nourishing to us and the people around us are making those decisions that encourage these things that are about our own well-being and time and connection and presence and wonder and gratitude, and not that extra cash.
I love that visual of little fish kisses. It's a beautiful way to put it. Yeah.
I like that a lot. It came to me.
Gorgeous.
I can't miss this moment of just saying I did spend 12 years looking at the research on all of this. And so if someone is interested in learning more about all of this, there is so much wisdom in this book. And I think I bring some of my own, but I'm really talking about thousands of other people whose work I've compiled in here in quotes. So as part of each person's journey, I would encourage you to take a look at the book. You can buy it online, any of the normal places, but also encourage your library to get it, you know, is another great way to get access to this and make sure it's accessible to other people. And whether you read it through or just flip it open to the chapter titles that catch your eyes, like, or you just want to delve into more of that question of self-love or wondrousness or what have you, I would encourage people to make this part of the seeds that they're planting in their lives. And again, it's reclaiming the sacred, healing our relationships with ourselves and the world.
Well, Jeff, I mean, some great work that you've put into this book, I must say, and it's been fantastic. We could talk all day,
yes.
I think, you and I. We could talk all day about all of the aspects of well-being, happiness, you know, all of that, but we do have to wrap it up. I just want to say thank you so, so much. Tell us, you know, where people can get your book again, if you've got a website, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I do have a website. It's reclaimingthesacred.net. But in terms of buying the book, if you don't find it in your local bookstore, you can order it through them for sure. It's available through all the major distributors. It's also available at the, you know, Barnes & Noble and Amazon online. And again, I would encourage people to request it at your local library so that you have access to it and it helps get in other people's hands as well.
Jeff Golden there. It really is a well-researched book packed with insights and information. Now, as you may have understood by now, Jeff loves to get out into the countryside, but at this time of year, that's a problem for some. I usually just suffer mild symptoms for a couple of weeks around now. I never want to take a drug or an antihistamine, so discovering Nasal Guard was a win for me. I haven't had any issues at all so far this year. Nasal Guard is a drug-free product that's safe and simple to use, but also highly effective at keeping airborne particles, including dust and pollen, at bay. Tammy Taylor knows all about pollen and dust. She lives in Wichita in Kansas, the hay fever capital of the USA, and her allergy symptoms can be so bad she uses nasal guard spray rather than the gel to top up her allergy shots, allowing her to stay functional during the season. I asked her how she started using nasal guard.
So I'm going to say it's been 13, 14 years ago now. I actually had a allergy workup. So I had all the pricks on the skin and told me exactly what I was allergic to here in Kansas. So it was everything from the grass starting to grow, the bees moving the pollen, the trees starting to bloom, flowers, and then going all the way through summertime. And once we found out what I was allergic to, my allergy doctor, you know, we're going to give you shots, but there's some extra boost type of thing that you may try. And so he gave me a long list of different things, and nasal guard was in there. I try to keep as natural as possible. I don't like a lot of medicines, and nasal guard was something that seemed to work for me here in the middle of Kansas.
How bad was it? How did it affect your life?
Runny nose, red eyes, coughing, just because of the drainage all the time. Some days were worse than others, so I would try to stay in, but you know, you could only filter so much from the outside to come in. But I take a couple showers a day when I'm out and about, because trying to get the pollen and off the body and change clothes, it was quite an ordeal. It made me look like a old crying woman.
Yeah, it's not a good look, is it? I know. Yep. So tell me, how did nasal guard help you?
Well, with the allergy shots and then being able to use that, and I use it probably definitely twice a day. Some days it was probably three times a day. Just kept my sinuses moist for one thing, but then, you know, opening it up. I know that the menthol part of it kind of is, you know, what opens everything so that you can smell and breathe, and that helped with the coughing part.
Do you find it intrusive, or do you find it really easy to use?
I find it very easy to use. The applicator, you know, give a squirt and a sniff. And so I do it in the morning, especially during my allergy times. I don't have to use it quite as much during the winter times. You know, I kind of have a cycle that I am an avid user or type of thing, but no, I carry it, you know, in my purse, and therefore if I feel that it wears off, I can go to the bathroom and it's just a little applicator that you take off the top and, you know, it squirts up in there, and I always hold the other side of my nose and do the sniff and then change and sniff it up. And I find that the little squirt is about the right amount, you know, and then I let it set for a minute to see if it starts to effectively work. So it's just one spray into each nose and continue on my way. Seem to, within 10, 15 minutes, can feel some more breathing, or better breathing, I guess.
So you find it very easy. You carry it with you all the time. And it does sound like you've had a really, you know, you've been dealt a very bad hand when it comes to allergies. How does it make you feel when you know that you can actually go about your life without having to look like you're a completely bedraggled wet kitten with, you know, your nose streaming?
Well, it's definitely made it a lot better. I mean, makeup's not running down my face. Like I say, I took those allergy shots, and so that did reduce it during, and has continually to reduce it. It makes a big difference once you can get that, you know, before I start to get on a phone call or something, and it's natural. So it's not necessarily a drug. And if I feel that I need a squirt before I head into a meeting or something, I know that I'm opened up and be able to speak without sneezing, snorting, or coughing.
Yeah, that's important as well, isn't it? Because it's not a drug. So you can use it, and you're using it in conjunction with your shots. So what it does is it gives you that extra help that you obviously need. And so how long does the season last there? I mean, you have allergies all year round, do you?
I do not. So mine start probably the end of February, 1st of March, because that's when here in Kansas, everything starts to activate after coming out of the winter. Mine goes through our corn harvest. So as a child, in the middle of the wheat harvest, the wheat dust and everything. And then we also planted corn, and that was my most, so corn and wheat overlapped. Wow. Yeah. And the flourish pollen part of the corn is the same time as the wheat dust. So my end of June, 1st of July, which is coming up, is my heavy season. And then end of August is kind of when harvest finishes with what I'm allergic to. But then it goes into another harvest of soybeans and milo and stuff, but I'm not allergic to those. So I would say March through the end of July is my season.
Yeah, well, that's long enough, isn't it, to be suffering? So, well, I'm really glad to hear that it has done such a good job for you, and the fact that it doesn't interfere with anything that you're taking, like the shots that you have, it doesn't interfere with those at all. And long may that continue. So, Tammy, thank you so much for talking to us about your experience with Nasal Guard. I'm really glad that it's helping you out.
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Good to hear a success story there. If you want to try Nasal Guard for yourself, just click on the link on the UK Health Radio homepage for worldwide delivery. And that just about brings us to the end of today's show, brought to you in association with Nasal Guard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants, as well as indoor and outdoor allergens. If you want to find more about me, then do check out my websites, thepracticalalchemist.uk, and also Safe Haven Healing. That's where you'll find out all about my energy clearing work. You'll find all the links to my social media channels at my websites, as well as my new YouTube channel, Alternatively Speaking. You'll find a slightly longer version of my chat with Jeff there too. And before I go, do remember to vote in the UK Health Radio Awards this year. Yes, that's right, our awards are back. So please go ahead and click on the link on the homepage and vote for all your favourites. For now, though, it's just time to say thank you for listening. Join me next time for more Practical Alchemy. And until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.